Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Scott Kirshner. When a new invention was introduced in the United States back in the late 70s, there were some concerns about the consequences. Unmarried teenagers would jump off of bridges. Doctors would feel their authority was being undermined. Women would neglect prenatal care. And their state of emotional anxiety would prevent women from following the simplest instructions. All those things were concerns about the havoc that the home pregnancy test could wreak on society. Now, however, 8 in 10 women learn they're pregnant through a test purchased from the drugstore. In a recent New York Times piece, Pagan Kennedy dove into the history of the home pregnancy test. She also wrote about the smart tampon back in April, and she joins us now to talk about innovation in women's health. Welcome to Radio Boston, Pagan.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
So we mentioned some of the reactions to the home pregnancy test when it first got introduced in the 70s, but let's talk about the story of Margaret Crane, who invented the home pregnancy test. Tell us about her.
I actually did an earlier piece about home pregnancy testing, and I was trying to track down the person who was the originator of this idea because I thought it was so brilliant. And at that time, that was 2012, and I couldn't find the source of that idea. And after my piece came out, I got an email from this woman, Meg Crane, and she actually did hold the earliest patent on this home pregnancy test idea. And then, so she told me her whole story, and it's really like something out of Mad Men. She was living in the Greenwich Village in the 1960s, very much an artist and a liberated woman, and she worked at a pharmaceutical company in New Jersey. And one day she was walking through their lab, and she saw these sort of little kits, and they told her this was something that they would... Doctors would send in urine from women and they would test it there for urine samples. And her first thought was, why can't women do this themselves? It didn't look that complicated.
Uh-huh.
So she basically went home and she had this plastic paperclip box, dumped the paperclips out and built a prototype inside of it. And then showed it to her bosses, who universally said it was stupid. this was 1967, and that there was, no need for it. That what if only teenage girls would want it? They might commit suicide. Doctors would hate it.
And the idea was that this company, Organon, was developing pregnancy tests that were going to be sold to doctors. They didn't even have the consumer market in mind. Right.
And it was almost the same technology because the doctors weren't lab techs, But it happened that Organon's parent company was in the Netherlands, where people were a lot more liberal about women's health. So the Netherlands, the bosses in the Netherlands wanted to go ahead with it. And when her bosses did talk about it, sort of took it on as their idea. Once the big bosses approved it. And so she then had to really fight for not only her ownership of the idea, but her vision for the idea.
And you tell this amazing story where she has to sneak into a boardroom meeting at the company at Organon when they're deciding about the eventual design of the test. She brings her prototype in and she actually meets her future husband at that meeting.
Yes. She wasn't invited to come to the meeting because nobody remembered at this point the whole thing was her idea, but she had made the best prototype. They brought in all these other designers who thought, well, women would need things covered with frilly tassels and flowers and things, which really is not a very good idea when you're testing urine, right? And she had this nice, clean, beautiful lab kit that she was making for women. So it ended up being the only one that was even practical. And so they had to patent it under her name.
And the initial slogan that they used for marketing the home pregnancy test was, every woman has the right to know whether or not she's pregnant. I mean, that sounds kind of obvious.
Yes.
Today.
Well, that was wildly feminist back then. And that was actually, Meg Crane ended up living with the advertising manager for the test, who was really her champion. He came up with that slogan. She did the technology. And together they introduced the product in Canada in 1971. And so Canadian women had access to it, even while it would take many, many more years for Americans to get this product.
Meg Crane said to you that women and even some men still come up to her and thank her for inventing the test. So what did they tell her?
Well, she, after very recently, she decided to come forward. She's so modest that most of her friends didn't even know she did this. But she auctioned off her original kit to the Smithsonian. So now she's been acknowledged. And so she got some press out of that. And hopefully out of my article, she'll get a lot more.
I'm sure. Another article of yours back in April, you wrote about the tampon of the future, which has roots here in Boston,
right.
An MIT and Harvard Business School alumna, Reedy Tarial, who kind of strikes me as a modern day Meg Crane. So tell us her story.
Well, I think what's so brilliant about Reedy's idea is that for a long time, a lot of companies have wanted to give us blood tests at home. Well, the problem with that is you need a lot of blood. And who wants to, you know, create a vial of blood at home? That's just None of us are going to do that, right?
Yeah.
So that's been the hitch that's really keeping us from home blood testing. And it seemed like this was sort of insurmountable. And then Reedy had this idea one day, what about menstrual blood? And I think this is the importance of having female engineers. This idea that just didn't occur to, you know, decades and decades of engineers who were almost entirely male. And as she actually and her business partner, Stephen Geyer, as they began researching this and developing the idea, they realized they could create a tampon that would also be a medical device that would, turns out that menstrual blood has all kinds of cells in it shed by our reproductive system, by the ovaries and so on and so forth. So this, it's a very, very exciting new potential to collect these cells that you would otherwise, it would not be easy to get at, and test them for cancer.
Uh-huh. And not just diagnosing disease like cancer, but also monitoring fertility and potentially some other applications as well.
Exactly. So it would be kind of a monthly monitor of everything that's going on in your fertility system and just letting you know if you haven't, you know, if you have a sexually transmitted disease, if you have fertility problems, if anything's amiss. And so that's the vision. And they are starting with monitoring endometriosis. That's kind of the easiest thing to solve right now. So they're actually doing clinical trials right now.
And you noted that she had some discouraging early meetings with funders about this technology at first. And we should note that I think that analysis says 96% of the venture capital funding world is male. So what happened at some of those meetings?
Yeah. And, you know, this was this opened my eyes as a reporter because I always thought, oh, well, the problem is there aren't enough female engineers and stuff. But I think the real bottleneck is that the funders are very homogenous, white males. And so, you know, when she and Stephen pitched their idea to potential funders, several of them said, well, how can this be a product for men? You know, it would only help women. So what good is that? So can you turn it around into a product for men, which just sort of boggles the mind of how
it'd be hard to market a smart tampon to men, but maybe it could be done. I don't know.
So they had a lot of hitches there. And eventually what happened was they got some female investors who were very supportive of them. And that really helped.
So, I mean, is the insight here that whether we're talking about the development of home pregnancy testing or the future of tampons, that, you know, the innovation in technology world today is too focused on things that, you know, maybe a narrow slice of people are obsessed with, whether it's virtual reality goggles or driverless cars or things like that, and that you want to see us broaden the spectrum of things that get developed and people who are developing them?
Exactly. You know, I think that we could have any kind of technological world with any kind of goals we wanted. You know, we could put a lot more effort into, say, women's health if that was our desire. And so I really want to make people think about the technological world that could exist And to have the listeners right now think about, well, what do I want to exist that doesn't exist? And I think we've become, we feel very passive about it. If it doesn't, you know, we don't really know how these things come into being. And, you know, I think we all have kind of an obligation to get involved with the innovation stream and make our ideas known and really push for things that shouldn't exist.
And so these two examples that we've been talking about, are there others that you've identified and you're going to write about and you're focusing on as, hey, there's a whole wide world here of innovation for populations and maybe people who live in certain parts of the world that are starting to happen and you know, will happen more if we get kind of more diverse investors behind them?
Yeah, well, there's an inventor here at MIT, Amy Smith, who's really made it her life's work to think about what do inventions look like when we privilege the half of the world who makes under $2 a day? What does technology look like when we think about that audience and solving their problems and also bringing the brilliant people in Africa and Haiti who just don't have access to the technology stream into the process to contribute their ideas? There's that. There are amazing patient communities emerging on the internet where people are coming together to say, yeah, there's not a very good off-the-shelf solution to this. We're just going to fix it ourselves. Like diabetes patients now are reinventing glucose monitors. And that's very exciting, you know.
For sure. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Where things go. Pagan Kennedy is a contributor to the New York Times. Her forthcoming book is Inventology, How We Dream Up Things That Change the World. For a link to her articles on the home pregnancy test and the smart tampon, you can go to our website, radioboston.org. Pagan, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.